at macfound.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Today we're going to talk about homelessness in St. Petersburg and later open up the phone lines and take some phone calls from you. We'll also hear what President Trump's former Secretary of State said about President Trump as he was speaking last night in Texas. First, three listener comments about yesterday's program. Here's what three listeners had to say.
Manuel, I'm commenting in regard of the wall that Trump wants to build. I think in the past we have sections of the wall to stop the immigrants coming in. And I think it's a waste of money. We have a lot of people here that needs help. And instead of spending the money on the wall, we could help somebody else in this country. And immigrants not only comes through the border. Naturally, right now we have the exodus of all the people from Central and South America. But there's a reason for that, because the United States has intervened in these countries and changed the governments and put puppets in there. And they have wars, and they have all kinds of problems going on there with treatment of the people and killings and suffering. And I think the people come over here in response to what we have done in the past to them. So I think we should consider this and think on with our hearts that we have done wrong and we have to repay this, the things that we have done. We have people coming from other parts of the globe. We have Russians over here. Then nobody questioned them. And they leave. They come in illegally. They live in Miami. And what about them? How about the Cubans when the crisis with Castro? And they come over here and they got Social Security. They have a rise.
Yes, I'd just like to make a comment about what's going on with the Democrats and the Republicans and stuff, and it has a lot to do with what's going on in Wisconsin and Michigan and North Carolina and stuff. I'm just wondering if the GOP, if the Republicans are so sure that they're correct about everything that they do and really more people support their ideas than the Democrats, then why do they have to cheat to get elected? I don't really understand. If you have to cheat to get elected, then, and more people are voting for Democrats, but you have to cheat, I don't understand. If the GOP thinks they're right, why do they have to cheat? It's just a simple question, and I've yet to receive an answer from. I've asked Senator Rubio, and I've asked a few others, and I just don't seem to get an answer from them that why they feel justified in cheating. And to me, they claim to be the Christian party, and it doesn't seem very Christian to me.
We're listening to listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5.
Yes, thank you, sir. I listen to your program quite frequently, and I was just had a comment about what you were saying about what a lot of people are saying. They're trying to say that Donald Trump hasn't received any money for the wall yet. And all I'm saying is that Donald Trump never once said during the campaign or even after he was elected how the Mexicans were going to pay for the wall. He just said simply, and it was always word for word, that we're going to build a wall, which we've already started building, by the way, that we're going to build a wall and the Mexicans are going to pay for it. Okay, now here's what I'm thinking. We've acquired like almost 5,000 children under 5 years old, and they've been delivered to us at the border by the Mexicans. Now, they came from all these different countries in Central America. And all I'm saying is, what what kind of people would give us the cream? I know they have the hard times and they're afraid of all the drug lords, but the bottom line is we have acquired all these young children from other countries, which most of them are going to be adopted by pretty wealthy families, and they're going to turn out to be pretty smart kids. So all I'm saying is if even a small percentage of these children turn out to be lawyers, doctors, dentists, nurses, then we got paid. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there you have some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. We had some technical glitches there. Sorry about that. Well, tonight is the 29th annual Still No Room in the Inn Christmas Caroling at Homeless Shelters, which takes place in St. Petersburg. This has been going on, as I mentioned, for 29 years. One of the organizers joins us right now, John Stewart, who's been caroling since the start. John, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on.
So tell us, Still No Room at the Inn, what is it about?
Well, Still No Room at the Inn Carol thing started, as you said, 29 years ago with ASAP Homeless Services. They had to close their doors, but Celebrate Outreach has taken up the caroling. Celebrate Outreach is a coalition of St. Pete area faith groups and individuals who are working to prevent and end homelessness. We do three meals a week, Saturday morning breakfast, a Friday night picnic, and then a Sunday evening dinner at my church, Missio Dei. And we are working with the University of South Florida Architecture School to build tiny homes for homeless vets. Students there have designed them under the leadership of Professor Josue Robles Caraballo, and we just broke ground last month on our first tiny home. These are designed to be economical. They're not gimmicky. They're designed to be economical, green, and affordable and livable for folks. We do other things other than those four programs, the three meals and the tiny home. And one of the things that we do, as I said, every year is Still No Room in the Inn. Tonight at 6:30, we will be at the UU Church in St. Petersburg at 100 Mirror Lake Drive. We're just around the lake from the shuffleboard courts. And we will go to a women's residence and carol where they always ply us with cookies and hot chocolate. And then we're going to go to the shuffleboard courts where we carol there. And then a residence, an assisted living residence. And we end up down on the waterfront with more hot chocolate and cookies. So if you've got a sweet tooth and you're looking for something fun and meaningful to do tonight, join us at 6:30 at the UU Church on Mirror Lake.
And you're doing this to say that we still haven't solved the homeless problem, and this has been going on for years and years now.
Yes. The reason it's called Still No Room in the Inn is because, of course, allegedly, we are remembering the birth of Jesus of Nazareth at Christmas. And what we want to do is say, okay, he was born as a homeless refugee child. Today, he might be at the border between Mexico and the U.S. He could be anywhere in the world. But in the Christmas story, rich people wanted more wealth, and they said, we're going to tax you. You have to go back to your homeland. That's not where Jesus was, you know, it's not where his parents lived or he grew up. He was a refugee in Bethlehem. And we want to say, if you're going to have Christmas, if you're going to remember the birth of this child, who would later say, how you treat the poor is how you treat God, how you treat me. If you want to recognize the birth of this child, let's look at the folks who are still with us and still in this situation 2,000 years later in a country filled with churches. And so we do that because there's a moral, a political, a historical, a theological meaning to Christmas that isn't brought up, and it's also a lot of fun. And it's amazing. I used to teach high school, and every year, a lot of my students would show up. And in fact, tonight, some of the students from the high school where I taught are planning to be there. You would see people coming together with in caroling that would never ever meet otherwise. And amazing things happen. There are just incredible stories over the years of coming out of the caroling. Go ahead.
We're talking with John Stewart. He is the vice president of Celebrate Outreach, which is a group that is dedicated to preventing and ending homelessness in St. Petersburg. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're talking about the annual Christmas caroling that John's group will do tonight, beginning at 6:30 on Mirror Lake Drive in downtown St. Petersburg, right there at the Unitarian Universalist Church. John, I got to ask you, there are a lot of homeless people in downtown St. Pete. You mentioned tiny homes as one of the projects to help relieve homelessness. What do you think the biggest misunderstanding that we have about homelessness is today in 2018?
I don't know if it's a misunderstanding, but the important thing that people need to know is that what homeless people need are homes. They need affordable housing. They need wraparound services. These kinds of programs have been tried elsewhere in the country, and they are hugely successful, and they cost less than having people on the street who need all sorts of services go to emergency rooms and so forth. And so what we're doing at Celebrate, doing the tiny homes, that's our help, you know, that's what we're doing there. We're helping folks who are still homeless. We're also actually, at these meals, we provide services, we provide connections, we provide clothing and other needs. But the main thing homeless people need is housing.
And so a lot of people formerly who had housing, who had jobs that would at least pay for the rent for a house, they are out on the streets. These are not, I think the stereotype sometimes is that it's folks with substance abuse problems, that's who's out on the streets, but it's more than that.
It is, and you talked, there are as many reasons people are homeless, almost as there are homeless people. When you talk to folks, I'm at the church this morning for a meeting where we have our Saturday morning breakfast. I said hello to a guy I've known for years. He was a legal secretary. He was an attorney. You know, he was an assistant to an attorney, and he fell on some bad situations that he couldn't get out of, and he hasn't been able to get out of it yet. And he needs help and assistance in doing that.
Well, John, tell us again, tonight's annual event, the Still No Room in the Inn caroling, the Christmas caroling goes on in St. Petersburg tonight. Tell us how, where it's going to be, what time, and tell us how people can find out more about your group, Celebrate Outreach.
All right. Well, it is tonight. It is at 6:30. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 100 Mirror Lake Drive. If you know where the Coliseum is or you know where the shuffleboard court is, it's the same neighborhood. And it'll go till about 9. We're going to go to the caroling at various places, also spontaneous caroling. One year we met a couple on the bench, and I'm not making this up, she was pregnant. And so we had a real live Mary and Joseph, and we were able to help them. It'll end about 9. We'll end with cookies and hot chocolate on the waterfront. This is a lot of fun. We've had folks who have been with us for the whole 29 years. It is a really joyful event. It's something that people, you know, they say, when's Still No Room at the Year, in the end this year? They ask me about it. And if you are interested in doing something more significant for Christmas than shopping at the malls, this would be a great fun activity. Bring the kids, and we'll have a great time.
And how can people find out more about the group, your group, that works to prevent and end homelessness?
They can go to the Celebrate Outreach Facebook page or our website. Just type in Facebook Celebrate Outreach, common spelling, or just Google Celebrate Outreach, and you can find out how you can help. One of the great things, you can write a check, you can do hands-on, you can pass out food. We have places for everybody at Celebrate Outreach. Whatever your talent, whatever your skill, if you have a desire to serve, we've got a place for you.
Well, John, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on WMNF.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
It's been fun.
Great to have you here. Thanks. John's group is going to be out tonight beginning at 6:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 100 Mirror Lake Drive in downtown St. Petersburg, and it goes to a little bit after 8 o'clock tonight. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to open up the phone lines in a little bit. James sent this email in. He said, please extend my thanks to Mr. Stewart for his efforts to bring attention to the needs of the homeless in our community, and my wishes for a successful caroling season, writes Jim in St. Pete. About John's work. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Kim writes this, and unfortunately John's not here. John is also an activist in the anti-death penalty movement, and Kim wanted me to ask him, mentioned the vigil that they do for every execution. The next one was signed by Governor Scott for December 13th, so it looks like there will be another person executed here in Florida on December 13th. Well, one of the callers at the top of the show mentioned the legislatures in North Carolina and Wisconsin who are trying to make it harder for the newly elected Democrats to govern. That topic came up last night on MSNBC. Chris Hayes had a guest on, the incoming Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin. Let's listen to this interview about what's going on in Wisconsin.
Before the sun came up this morning, Wisconsin Republicans managed to ram through a transparently anti-democratic set of lame duck legislative measures explicitly designed to restrict what the incoming democratically elected Democratic governor and incoming Democratic attorney general can do when they take office. Among other things, preventing them from carrying out campaign promises on health care and voter rights. Joining me now is one of those incoming Democrats, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. So what is your reaction to watching this play out in the wee hours of the morning when it's specifically targeted at what powers you will have when you occupy the office?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Chris. This is legislation that is clearly designed to undermine the results of the elections that we just had for governor and for attorney general in Wisconsin, and the process through which this was passed was simply embarrassing. It was literally passed in the middle of the night, and it was written behind closed doors. It happened, this last evening. And, one of the central issues in the race for attorney general and the governor's race was whether Wisconsin should withdraw from this lawsuit that's seeking to invalidate the Affordable Care Act, which, if it's successful, would eliminate protections for people with a pre-existing condition. And the legislature has now taken the power to authorize withdrawal from that suit away from the governor and given it to itself. They've basically made the debate that we had over this issue in the campaign into a sham. It's really unfortunate.
Just to be clear, Scott Walker joined the suit. I guess it was the governor's office. Was it the governor's office that decided to join that suit, not the attorney general?
The AG was involved in filing the suit, and Scott Walker authorized the AG's involvement in it.
And so you and Tony Evers, when you're running, say both were on the same page. We want to get out of this lawsuit. If you elect me, we will withdraw from this lawsuit, a power that the governor of Wisconsin had until 4 a.m. this morning.
That's exactly right. And, Governor Walker still hasn't signed this bill. So one of the things that we're still hoping will happen is that he'll decide not to move forward with signing this bill and, undermining the results of an election that he just lost. But if he does sign it, I think it's very likely that this is going to end up in court.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a second. But first, I want you to respond to the Republican Assembly Leader, Robin Voss, who was very explicit about what he's up to here. I applaud him for not making a pretense of any kind of like process neutrality. Take a listen to what he says.
We're going to have every opportunity to find common ground with Governor-elect Evers. That's going to happen. We have to. We have to work together. But I also know that the situation that we are sitting in right now, if we do not pass these proposals, is that we are going to have a very liberal governor who is going to enact policies that are in direct contrast to what many of us believe in.
What do you think of that as an explanation?
Well, if Robin Voss wants to control what the governor does, he should run for governor or he should have done more in this campaign. But Tony Evers won the election for governor, and now the legislature is putting aside the practice that has happened for generation in states across the country, in our federal government, which is transferring the full powers of the office after an election. The Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature have decided that they know better than the voters, apparently, and they're seeking to take powers away from the governor-elect and from me.
You just said that this will end up in court. There are people saying this is dirty pool, or this is kind of maximalism. But what legal recourse is there for you and for the incoming governor?
I think there are unfortunately likely to be multiple lawsuits that come from this. I mean, one of the issues is that the legislature has taken power that is pretty clearly executive in nature, like the ability to resolve lawsuits, and has given that power to itself. So there are potentially some separation of power issues here, among other things. And one of the unfortunate results of this is, you know, you heard Robin Voss speak earlier about how he wants to work together. I have made clear, Governor-elect Evers has made clear, that we want to work with Republicans in the legislature to solve problems that face Wisconsinites, like our opioid epidemic, for example. But what the legislature has done with this action is virtually ensured that we're going to be mired in litigation for a big part of 2019. I'd much rather be focusing on the problems that face Wisconsin families.
Wisconsin Attorney General-elect Josh Call, who, according to new legislation, has an office 5 square feet in total size.
Well, that was Chris Hayes' interview last night with Josh Call, the incoming Attorney General of Wisconsin. He's a Democrat. Did Chris really say that Call's new office is going to be 5 square feet? That's pretty incredible. So what do you think about that? Republicans making a play to limit the power of incoming Democrats in places like Wisconsin and North Carolina. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. You heard that soundbite from the legislator in Wisconsin. His big reason was that we're going to have a very liberal governor coming in, and that's why he was in favor of legislation. Isn't that what elections are all about? Conservatives have won many, many times here in Florida, and that's what people voted for here in Florida, albeit not by a large margin, but when people voted for Governor Scott or for Marco Rubio or for Ron DeSantis, they were voting for hardcore conservatives. We knew that, and that's the way it is. You know that you give them power for a while, and then maybe when people get angry enough at what the Republicans are doing, or in the case of Wisconsin, what the Republicans are doing, then you vote the other way. What do you think? 813-239-9663. There are some other things in the news that I think we should talk about. Reading from the AP this morning, U.S. employers added 155,000 jobs in November. That's a slowdown from recent months, but enough to suggest that the economy is expanding at a solid pace, despite sharp gyrations in the stock market. The Labor Department said this morning that the unemployment rate remained at 3.7%, nearly a five-decade low for the third straight month. Average hourly pay rose 3.1% from a year ago, matching the previous month's figure, which was the best since 2009. So in other words, pay has gone up 3.1% in the last 2 months from a year ago, a year previously, but it hasn't really gone up significantly since 2009 before that. So we could talk about that. We could talk about the unemployment numbers. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can also send your email comment into dj@wmnf.org. Well, later today, the special counsel and federal prosecutors in New York City have to file memos in court detailing the cooperation of longtime Trump attorney Michael Cohen, who's admitted lying to Congress and orchestrating hush money payments to protect the president. Mueller's team also will be disclosing what it says ex-Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort lied about when his plea deal fell apart just a few days ago. In the last 24 hours, the president has sent out at least 13 tweets, most of them pretty angry. They're largely about the investigation into his administration. Well, ex-Fox TV news personality and State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert is expected to be chosen the next U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. The Trump administration is poised to replace Nikki Haley with Nauert. Haley is stepping down at the end of this year. Two women who cleaned rooms that were set aside for President Trump at one of his golf resorts in New Jersey say that they were using false papers to get hired. Their supervisors knew about that, and that many Trump employees at this same location also are undocumented immigrants. An attorney for the women says that the two used false Social Security and permanent residency documents to get jobs at Trump's golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey. And this lawyer also said that a supervisor hurled racial epithets at the women and threatened them with deportation to get more work out of them. The two are now considering a lawsuit against the Trump Organization for workplace abuse and discrimination. 813-239-9663. Call that number and you'll get on the air. A Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the U.S. economy overall is strong, but many rural areas are falling farther behind. Powell says unemployment in the poorest rural counties is more than double the national average last year, while those employed or looking for jobs in their prime working years have seen their incomes lag during the current economic expansion. Police last night gave the all clear after a phoned-in bomb threat forced the evacuation of CNN's television studios in New York City. Police say a man with a southern accent called CNN just after 10 p.m. last night and said five bombs had been placed throughout the CNN facility inside the Time Warner building at Columbus Circle. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. The Tampa Bay Times reported on the front page this morning that nearly 230,000 gallons of wastewater spilled from a tank Monday in St. Petersburg at one of the city's water treatment plants. This is the latest in a series of six spills that began in August and have totaled nearly 2 million gallons of wastewater gushing from city infrastructure in the last 3 months. Latest spill happened at a city facility on 62nd Avenue Northeast. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. The chair of the Florida Democratic Party says the revelations that Congressman-elect Ross Spano violated campaign finance law by taking out personal loans and directing approximately the same amount of money to his campaign should disqualify him from serving in Congress. Florida Democratic Party Chair Terry Rizzo said in a statement earlier this week that Spano knew exactly what he was doing when he took personal loans and used them as campaign funds, which is against the law. She said that this matter needs to be fully investigated and appropriate actions taken. The freshman Republican acknowledged transgressing rules against straw donations in a letter from his attorney to the Federal Elections Commission dated last week. Spano borrowed $180,000 in four installments from June to October at an interest rate of 5%. The candidate lent his campaign committee $167,000 in personal funds over roughly the same period. Spano accepted $75,000 from a lender on October 29th, 8 days before the election, and directed $70,000 to his campaign on the same day. The loans far exceed the $2,700 limit on contributions from individuals to federal candidates. Spano expects to fully repay them by the end of this week, according to his letter to the FEC. So we could talk about that, too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Adam writes this email. He says, you can really tell that individual one is getting very nervous and worried by the content and volume of tweets about the investigation. Yeah, the president issued a lot of tweets this morning. He was very upset. And let's go to Bill in Homosassa, and thanks to Frank Knox and Patty Perkey, our phone producers today. Hey, Bill, you're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
The Wisconsin mess.
Okay.
You know, it seems, and I suppose that's why I got right through, because I think the whole country's becoming numb to this nonsense. I mean, it's got to be unlawful. Some way, shape, or form, what they're doing there cannot be, you know. The guy even stood there and said what they think. Not what the people think, but what he or his party thinks. The Koch brothers, more or less. But I don't know. I mean, it's just, I'm there's so much.
Well, what? Yeah, Bill, what do you think would happen if Democrats had won this time around and then... here in Florida, Republicans tried to make it so that the attorney general and the governor couldn't act in the same way that the previous governor and attorney general had acted. Do you think that Floridians would settle for this? Would they say, okay, that's fair?
Yeah, I do. I think, unfortunately, I do believe it, because Rick Scott got elected twice and then sent the Senate. It's beyond me to no end. I have no reason for that man to do that, but he did. So, yeah, I think the people in this state would stand for that. I do.
Okay. All right, Bill, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. We might have a bad phone line there on line two. I don't think that was Bill's phone. I think that was maybe an internal problem here. And let's go to Danny in Tampa. Hey, Danny, you're on WMNF. What do you think about all this news?
Oh, I think it's just every day is like a buckle up every day. But you know, some of the funnier tweets the last 2 weeks that Trump has put out was the one that he said that he would be at 75% if it wasn't for the Russian witch hunt. Colbert tried that one out last night. The whole New York crowd couldn't stop laughing on that one. Just hilarious. And the other one that he put the week before was that at a rally in Mississippi, how great Elvis was, which I agree. Then he said that a lot of people told him he looked like Elvis growing up. Well, the Inside Edition put a side-by-side young Elvis and young Trump, and they said, you decide. And Trevor Noah said the only way that if it wasn't for the blonde hair, he said. And Trevor Noah said, yeah, it wasn't for the blonde hair, the face, the body, and the voice, he wouldn't look like Elvis, you know. But that was hilarious. Now, the whole thing is, Rob, how can Wisconsin, how can the state of Wisconsin participate in doing this and trying to strip away the powers of the person who just voted in? That is third world if I've ever heard it. Michigan's doing the same thing. And in North Carolina, you heard what happened there, right?
North Carolina did this a few years ago.
Get the absentee ballots in North Carolina?
Yeah, it looks like there might be some huge election problem in North Carolina where some absentee ballots, hundreds of absentee ballots may not have been counted, and they were gathered by somebody who is a crook.
Right.
Who had ties to the Republican Party.
Do you remember the guy's name? They showed him already, and I can't remember his name already. He's a well-known Republican operative, you know. Rob, shouldn't he be subject to arrest, jail time, or be arrested for this?
Well, I think interfering in an election like that is a crime. So
that is illegal.
I don't know who the state attorney or the district attorney is in that part of North Carolina, but I would imagine that they'd be looking into it. Should be looking into it. Also, the U.S. attorney should be looking into it.
Exactly. And Rob, what do you think about Wisconsin? How can that be possible? How is that legal?
Well, as you heard, the Democrats are going to file a lawsuit. They feel like they shouldn't have to file a lawsuit because, it is dirty politics. But we'll see where it goes. You know, the courts, a lot of the courts, especially under President Trump, a lot of the federal courts are being taken over slowly by judges who owe their career there in the federal court to Donald Trump. So
a slew of them, that's for sure. But, let me do this. I think Mueller, I think now, is going to have more information coming out today on Manafort. And I think, you know, that pretty soon, and now with Cohen, I think he's really tying it up. I think he's tying up the loose ends pretty soon. And I think that before Christmas, I believe, I've got a feeling that we may hear something that's mind-blowing or jolting to Trump right before you give him a little Christmas present. That's just my prediction. But or at least before January, and for sure in January 3rd when they take over.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments.
You have a great day.
You know, it could be, too, that Mueller comes out with things that don't really match Democrats' optimism. Are you going to be prepared for that if Mueller doesn't come out with a huge, hard-hitting demonstration of, let's say, Trump's illegal action? What if he doesn't do that? And as a Democrat, we get a lot of Democrats calling the show. Will you be prepared for that? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Last night in Texas, Rex Tillerson, the former Secretary of State under President Trump, was on a panel, on a stage, rather. Bob Schieffer, the former CBS Sunday Morning Face the Nation host, was asking him some questions. And this question came up. Listen to this. And what do you think about what Rex Tillerson is saying here?
How would you describe Donald Trump?
Well, most of you probably know some of this, but I had never met Donald Trump until the day he asked me to be Secretary of State. He acts on his instincts. In some respects, that looks like impulsiveness, but it's not his intent to act on impulse. I think he really is trying to act on his instincts. It was challenging for me, coming from the disciplined, highly process-oriented ExxonMobil Corporation to go to work for a man who is pretty undisciplined, doesn't like to read, doesn't read briefing reports, doesn't like to get into the details of a lot of things, but rather just kind of says, look, this is what I believe, and you can try to convince me otherwise, but most of the time you're not going to do that.
How did your relationship go off the rails?
Well, I think part of it was obviously we are starkly different in our styles. We did not have a common value system. When the president would say, well, here's what I want to do, and here's how I want to do it. And I'd have to say to him, well, Mr. President, I understand what you want to do, but you can't do it that way. It violates the law. It violates a treaty. You know, he got really frustrated. I didn't know how to conduct my affairs with him any other way than in a very straightforward fashion. And I think he grew tired of me being the guy every day that told him, you can't do that. And let's talk about what we can do.
That's very, very interesting. Well, it is.
Well, that's former CBS anchor Bob Schieffer asking questions of Rex Tillerson, President Trump's former Secretary of State, last night in Texas. Tillerson saying the president is undisciplined, he doesn't like to read, he doesn't go into details of things, he didn't have a common value system with the president, writes or says Tillerson. Tillerson says that at times he told President Trump, you can't do that, that would violate the law, it would violate a treaty, and he says that he thinks that President Trump grew tired of hearing that from Tillerson. What do you think? 813-239-9663. This is WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Kevin, who's in Bradenton. Kevin, what would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. Interesting that what you just played, but I don't think it's too surprising. Actually, I'm going to beat a dead horse, you know, and I'm going to call in about the situation in Wisconsin and Michigan and North Carolina. And I'm going to ask, you know, you to help a little bit here for people like me to understand. It's my understanding that gerrymandering has led to the, you know, having the Republicans in position to do the things that they're doing when a Democratic governor gets in and an AG, but they've already gerrymandered so much up there. That's one of the reasons that they have the power to do what they're doing. That's correct, right? I believe.
Well, yeah, when you gerrymander your House of Representatives, and I think Wisconsin does have two houses, your House of Representatives is easier to gerrymander. Also, your Senate is gerrymandered, and that means that you might have a situation like Florida where you have many more Democrats than you have Republicans, but the way the Republicans have drawn the districts, they control your state legislature.
Like, if we go to the root of the problem, then, you know, this couldn't have happened if there hadn't been probably, you know, the extreme gerrymandering going on in places like Wisconsin and Michigan and North Carolina. That's what I'm trying to get at is, you know, I've heard Republicans say that the reason that this is okay in Wisconsin is because we're actually a constitutional republic, as if we're somehow not a democracy, which, I mean, I'm not a policy wonk, and I think, you know, you could probably explain the differences or how, you know, that all works as far as, you know, the meanings of the word. But I don't think that that's actually, it may be legal, but it's got to be something that is so obviously wrong with the system.
Yeah, we just lost Kevin. He just jumped off. That could be that phone problem was just culminated in a dead line there. Sorry about that, Kevin. You know, I hear this talk a lot that we're a constitutional republic. I think really it's a code to say, as Kevin was suggesting, we're not a democracy. Yet if your grandparents or parents were alive during World War II, the reason we fought World War II was we were fighting for democracy. If you listen to the rhetoric during the Cold War against the Soviet Union, a lot of people said America is a democracy, the Soviet Union is not. I mean, we've been told in our lives, the lives of our parents, the lives of our grandparents, that we're a democracy. And I think for people to somehow come out and say, well, we're a constitutional republic, that's just gobbledygook. It doesn't mean anything. We don't have a direct democracy, that's true. But we do try to democratically elect our representatives. And for people to come up with words that might hide their true meaning, somehow it's okay to gerrymander because we're a constitutional republic. I don't think it's okay to gerrymander, even if we were solely a constitutional republic. So I would be careful of people using those words and then not using the word democracy. I think it's fair to say we're both. It's no justification for gerrymandering. You shouldn't just kind of lump people of one party in one district. That's wrong. Let's take some more phone calls. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. And let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Hi, Andy. You're on WMNF.
Yeah, I don't know what's the deal with Wisconsin with what happened there a few years ago with Scott Walker and not doing the people's will. I mean, they did it here in Florida when we voted for money for Everglades restoration and voted for medical marijuana, and they just started dragging their feet. Remember when Jeb Bush wanted to have a second vote some years ago because it didn't quite go the way he wanted?
Well, on the bullet train, you mean that second vote?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah,
he was like, well, I don't think the people really understand, and it's like, no, you don't understand, servant. You people are supposed to be up there serving us, and when you're not serving the will of the people for what we voted for, and you're trying to mess around with it like they're doing in Wisconsin, you're breaking the law. So the people up there need to really storm the governor's mansion. And I think the thing in our country is the politicians aren't afraid of the people like they are overseas. If you watch the movie Sicko, they said, you know, those people, their governments, they're scared of their people because they know that they're going to get out and revolt.
So, yeah, look at what's happening in France this weekend. There's going to be yet another round of demonstrations against the gas tax hikes. A lot of people don't like them. There was a severe incident of police brutality just a few days ago in France where teenagers were brutalized by police. I think the whole nation over there is upset, and President Macron has had to back away from that tax. You're right. People, I think, in other countries, when things get dicey, when they think the government is not doing what they want, they do stand up.
Yeah, well, folks over here can't be bothered with that. They might miss their next reality TV.
Well,
show.
Andy, you were around. The Tea Party stood up. They didn't like Obamacare. And I went to several Tea Party rallies, and there were some angry people at Tea Party rallies. I experienced some really loud shouting, some angry people. I interviewed them at the time. They stood up because they thought that. With Obamacare, there were going to be death panels. Well, it turns out that wasn't true. That they were, these people were being misled, and it's unfortunate.
They still have their guns. Nobody came around their guns up like they were all.
But the Tea Party people get angry. They get fired up and they scare the government. I think it's. I think it tends to be liberals and moderates and people on the left who don't scare the government enough to push it in their direction. I went to the rally right after President Trump's inauguration on the waterfront in downtown St. Petersburg. Huge rally, 20,000 people, all very peaceful, good-humored, hardly any anger, very funny signs, people arm in arm. But that rally didn't scare anybody. But it was a sign that people were, upset. They were opposed to President Trump. And they wanted to show their solidarity with people around the country who were out in force that weekend. But it was a very peaceful, pleasant, humorous, family-oriented rally, not like a Tea Party rally.
Yeah, it'd be nice if some of the Republicans would actually stand up and straighten that spine out and say, even though we might not agree with the left or whatever, what's going on up there is not right, and as Americans, we can't stand for that. So
yeah, sometimes liberals are going to win in a fair election. Yeah. Sometimes liberals are going to win, and you got to just live with it. You got to say, okay, they won.
Yeah.
All right, Andy. All right. Great to hear from you. We've got an open line. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And let's go to Tina in Tampa. Hi, Tina. You're on MNF.
Hi. Gerrymandering is giving one party greater say than their numbers deserve. You know, when you have gerrymandered districts, you stack the deck.
That's true.
So that one or the other has a greater say.
Okay.
And this is why in this state that there have been people so angry that the legislature drags its feet, or as you say, walks something and doesn't act on it, and so they put it to a vote so they don't have to deal with the gerrymandered districts. But what I want to say is Rex Tillerson said, you know, that President Trump tends to want to act on his instincts. There's nothing wrong with that, to pause and feel your instincts and think about them and listen to them sometimes. But President Trump's instincts are so uninformed and sometimes misinformed that, like, just an example, that this woman that he says now he wants to appoint as to replace Nikki Haley, the UN commissioner,
the former Fox News host.
She's from Fox News, and she said something, and I don't even think he probably knows that the high point in U.S.-German relations was at D-Day. Excuse me, but that was the low point in relations. And he seems like I think everybody observed. He gets a lot of advisors from the TV. Like, you know, Larry Kudlow was from, I think, MSNBC, was it? And then he had Omarosa was from The Apprentice. But he's got a number of people there that he's gotten from the media, but always a right-wing media. And I think he's got one other. What is that woman who I can't remember her name right offhand, but her husband is critical of Trump?
Kellyanne Conway.
Wasn't she from Fox News? Or
She might have been. I think you're right. I think the president does pick people on a superficial basis. He looks at how they look. And do they make good TV? In his mind, he wants men to be imposing. He wants women to be sexy. And those are pretty much the way he picks people. As Rex Tillerson said, though, that the president, and this is a guy that worked with him, is undisciplined. He doesn't like to read. He doesn't go into details. He doesn't understand what the law is. And I think that's telling.
That's taking a toll on how things are working or not working for this country. I think you can't be in that position and not want to read or not want to.
Exactly. And nobody is smart enough to know everything about the planet. And that's why you rely on advisors who do know a thing or two about other countries.
And like you say, rely on advisors, but then to choose people because they make good sound bites or because they look good, but maybe there's like nothing upstairs. I think we are very ill served by him as president. And I'm not saying because he's a Republican and I'm not a Republican. You know, there have been Republican presidents I don't agree with, but I would say they were very smart. The one that we just.
Tina, some of the best advice, and I've read, you know, lots of books by CEOs. Some of the best CEOs say they always pick people that are smarter than them. They want to surround themselves with brilliant minds to be challenged and also to help figure out what the best strategy is. Tina, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. Awesome. All right. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Larry in St. Petersburg. Larry, you're on WMNF.
Hey, a couple real quick points. I know we're kind of running short. To Rex Tillerson's point, I mean, it's brutally obvious that Trump had a warped perspective on what the presidency was. I mean, he really thought it was more of a monarchy, you know, and he could do whatever he wanted. And that's sort of reflected in how he's drawn to the Putin and the Kim Jong-un's of the world.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's like he never took a civics class, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you asked somebody earlier what would happen if the Florida legislature passed some laws to circumvent the power of an incoming Democratic Party. I'll give you three quick examples how they're doing it right now in a very good way. One is the gerrymandering issue. The state overwhelmingly passed a constitutional amendment to eliminate gerrymandering, and Tallahassee continues to try to get away with not implementing that. There's also the land acquisition, amendment, where the money was, allocated overwhelmingly to acquire land, and they have done everything in their power to keep from, to keep them from implementing the will of the people. And I just read today where the state supervisor of elections has asked the legislature to, for their interpretation of the newly passed Felon Voting Rights Act, on that, when that actually, when the amendment is crystal clear on what the overwhelming part of a majority of the voting public wanted to happen.
Yeah, Larry, those are great points. In fact, that last point we're going to talk about on my TV show tonight on Channel 3. And I'll add one more. Your list is great. Gerrymandering, land acquisition, medical marijuana is what I would add to your list. And
I agree. They did monkeyed with that to make it as hard as humanly possible.
The whole gerrymandering issue, though, I mean, back in the day, after voters passed the law against gerrymandering here in the state, a citizens group was able to challenge the last time they redrew districts here in Florida. They got a judge in Tallahassee to pretty much side with them, and then the Florida Supreme Court approved it. So you had moderately less gerrymandering last time around. But here's what's going to happen, is that we're going to get a new Florida Supreme Court who will ultimately look at whether or not districts are gerrymandered during the 2020 process. And we are going to have a 100% conservative-run Florida Supreme Court. And you can bet that they are going to side with the Republican legislature, and we may be going backwards when it comes to gerrymandering.
I just ate breakfast, and you're not helping.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's my job to try to bring some reality.
Yes, and I totally agree, and it's one of the reasons I've always talked about the implications of electing governors or presidents. Their ability to appoint Supreme Court justices and how that those decisions can be generational in impact. Laws can be changed. Supreme Court rulings, that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah, that's true. Larry, thanks a lot. All right, sorry I interrupted your digestion process. Let's go to Patricia in Brandon. Hey, Patricia, you're on WMNF.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Yes, I think the results of the Florida elections, I think the results were due to several factors that not only affected Florida, but affected the whole nation. One of those reasons is the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision that opened the gates to oligarchs, the corporocracy, kleptocrats, national and international. Because from what I understand, Russia had a role to play in the midterms, and Florida was influenced by dark money, not only from the Kochs, but from the national oligarchs and international ones from, Russia. And so that's according to Joshua Delser, who is the founding executive director of the Institute for Constitutional Protection, who served as a senior director for counterterrorism on the National Security Council staff. So he said that, there is an article on the elections that Republicans won by a razor-thin margin. He said that because of the influence of Russia. He wrote in the article, Just Security, .org, quote, don't be fooled. There was election interference in 2018.
All right, well, I'll have to look up the... I'll look it up. Patricia, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, I'll look that up. David writes this, all this talk about gerrymandering, yes, the Republicans do seem to be pushing the rule of law where they're sore losers. But as far as gerrymandering goes, I know that Democrats were just as guilty of doing the same thing. It's been something that's been going on for, I think, generations, actually, writes David. Yeah, David is right. Gerrymandering has been going on. I think the problem, though, in Florida, or the problem in Wisconsin or Michigan or North Carolina, is that recently Republicans have controlled the process. They've gerrymandered. And now that the elections are over in places like Michigan and Wisconsin, Republicans are trying to stop Democrats from having any real power when the Democrats come into office in January. I think you got to solve the problem of gerrymandering. And there are mathematical formulas out there that you could follow that would prevent both Democrats and Republicans from doing it. I don't see a lot of Democrats when Republicans take over. For instance, when Democrats lost to Republicans 20 or 25 years ago in Florida, Democrats didn't try to take away power from incoming Republican governors. But I think overall you got to stop gerrymandering, and there's some formulas out there that would do that. If you want to comment about today's show, call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next, and Dan has a lot to talk about, so you want to stay tuned. Thanks to Frank Knox and Patty Perkey, our phone producers today. I'm Rob Lori. This is WMNF 10.